From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Casey and the Sunshine Band's unique fusion of funk and R&B has been delighting music audiences for nearly four decades. Later this month, the band comes to Southwest Florida for a live performance at the Seminole Casino in Immokalee. We'll be speaking with the voice and driving force behind the band, singer, songwriter, and producer Harry Casey, about everything from how he started the group in the 70s to the studio projects he's working on today. Plus, we'll also be delving into an important conversation many would prefer to avoid about end-of-life care. What are our options and what do they mean? What steps can we take to ensure that our wishes are followed? We'll speak with a physician and an elder care mediator who will be hosting a workshop on the topic later this month in Fort Myers. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Discussions about end-of-life care are something many of us would understandably prefer to avoid, but medical providers and elder care advocates remind us it's vital to think about, discuss with our loved ones, and take steps to ensure that our desires are carried out. A Pew Research Center study finds 71% of Americans have thought about what kinds of treatments they would want or would not want, but that just 29% of us actually have a living will. Additionally, there are many misconceptions out there about advanced directives, hospice, and palliative care. Joining me now for a closer look at these issues and a look at planning for end-of-life care is independent elder care mediator Stephanie Borden. She'll be hosting an end-of-life care Five Wishes, the greatest gift you'll ever give your loved ones workshop later this month in Fort Myers. Stephanie Borden, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, John.
Also with us by phone is Dr. Paul Mitchell. He's Chief Medical Officer and Vice President of Physician Relations for Avow Hospice in Naples. He's also Chief of the Palliative Medical Service at Naples Community Hospital Healthcare System, and he'll be speaking at the workshop as well. Dr. Mitchell, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And I invite our listeners to join the conversation. Have you thought about what you would want or not want in terms of medical care? Have you or your loved ones taken the time to complete any advance directive documents? Do your loved ones know what you would want if you were unable to make your own decisions? Share your thoughts and stories. Our number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post your comments or questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And first of all, Stephanie, I was hoping you could tell us just a bit about your work as an elder care mediator. Is helping people coming to understand what they truly want for themselves in terms of end-of-life care your primary work as an elder care mediator?
Well, elder care mediation can deal with long-term care decisions. For example, lots of times mediation kicks in when a family can't agree on how to handle the fact that mom or dad is failing, but they continue to want to live alone. Mm-hmm. And the parent becomes the child sometimes, the child becomes the parent. And the elders that I work with are not too happy with their children trying to tell them what to do. So mediation is a way to work out a solution that makes sense. End-of-life mediation is a very distinct specialty within the elder care mediation field.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a bit about that then more specifically. You're going to be giving this workshop on July 20th called the Five Wishes Workshop. And that's something that was put together. First of all, let's just go ahead and talk about what the five wishes are and what is going to take place in this workshop.
Okay. The Five Wishes is an advanced directives document that was originally written in 1997 by Jim Tuohy, who worked with Mother Teresa in her hospice in Washington, D.C. for a year. Since then, there have been 20 million copies distributed. It's available in 27 languages. And what I think is really different about it, because there are other models for advanced directives, living wills, etc., what's really different is that it also talks about the emotional, spiritual, and comfort care issues that that surround the end of life, and with the emphasis on making the time that your loved one has left as as respectful as possible according to their wishes. So it's all about not making your loved ones have to guess what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great gift to your loved ones, because to free them from any regret as the years pass after your own death, that's a great gift.
So the five wishes living will is more comprehensive than, say, just designating a healthcare surrogate. This really covers all aspects.
Yes, there are five wishes. The first one is the person I want to make healthcare decisions for me when I can't do it on my own. And that is, as you said, designating a healthcare agent. That's probably the most traditional of the five wishes. And wish two is my wish for the kind of medical treatment I want or don't want. That would mean saying yes or no to interventions such as major surgery, CPR, tube feeding, going on a breathing machine, dialysis, transfusions, if they will not cure you.
Sure. I'm going to stop you for just a moment there and bring Dr. Mitchell into the conversation. Do you find that patients commonly have misconceptions about what certain medical interventions actually mean or consist of? Is that something that you come across in your line of work?
Quite often that is the case. Individuals oftentimes have gross misconceptions about what a specific medical intervention will accomplish. Of course, most individuals, they want to be able to improve and have increased survival, and they think that a lot of the aggressive interventions will accomplish that, but oftentimes, just due to the natural history and progression of their disease process, no intervention is going to make a significant difference or change the outcome, even though it may be aggressive intervention such as cancer chemotherapy. Sometimes it may provide palliative type relief, you know, symptomatic relief, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily change the outcome of the disease process in terms of increased survival. And I think that's a big area of misperception among the people who have life-limiting illnesses, just what the intervention will accomplish.
Mm. That kind of leads a bit into the third aspect, or the third wish, which was how comfortable you want to be. Tell us about that more, Stephanie.
That would involve pain control and comfort care measures that you can identify or cross out on the document, including I want to be massaged with warm oils as often as possible. If I have a fever, I'd like a cool, damp cloth on my forehead. I would like my hygiene maintained so I'm clean and fresh. And if I exhibit signs of depression, nausea, or hallucinations, I would like that treated. And as death approaches, you get a chance in the five wishes to say that you'd like your favorite music played, your favorite poems read to you, a family photograph shared, or religious readings. And you want to be given a choice to choose whether to have hospice care at the end, either at home in a hospice house setting, or depending on the hospital, on the floor of the hospital that has hospice, or in a retirement home. So you get to actually put down your favorite songs and your favorite readings and so on.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. And Stephanie, I know you've been on the program in the past talking specifically about aging in place, and that's something you have a lot of experience in. Is it more and more common now for folks, you know, facing end-of-life care decisions to be able to pass away at home?
I think so, but Dr. Mitchell probably has a better command of the figures as far as that goes. What would you think, Dr. Mitchell?
Well, I think that for individuals who are facing terminal illness or life-limiting disease process, there comes a shift in the philosophy of care. When cure is no longer possible, or when it's even no longer possible to increase survival, it doesn't mean that you don't need a lot of care. And the wish of most individuals is to spend their last months of life generally in the home care setting. If you poll the large number of people in America, most of them will say, my wish is to die at home. And, of course, there are various agencies, hospice included, where the goal is to help individuals achieve their goals of care. And if their goal is to remain at home, then the emphasis and the philosophy of care shifts from cure or prolonging survival to quality of life and making sure that individuals with terminal illnesses achieve their goals that are delineated. So quality of life, being able to attain goals that have been discussed, you know, with family and other pertinent individuals that are important to you, and achieving those goals becomes the primary concern. So, but most individuals tend to want to be able to spend the last remaining time that they have, whether it's a few days, a few weeks, a few months, what have you. Mm-hmm. Most of them would prefer to be at home, surrounded by those that love and care about them.
Well, and Stephanie, let's move on to the fifth wish that's part of this living will.
Okay, or the fourth one.
Okay.
The fourth wish is how I want people to treat me. It talks about your wishes for visitors balanced by time alone, sharing possibly with your faith community that you are ill, prayer requests, visit requests, whether you want your hand held and whether you want an atmosphere of peace and acceptance among your family members. Many people who are dying report that their children are a great cause of stress to them because they don't want to let their parents go. Mm-hmm. And this is a way to say, it's time for me to go. I've had a good life. Wish five is what I want my loved ones to know, that I love them, that I ask forgiveness for something I've done, and that the family members left behind make peace with one another before I die and maintain that peace after. That's a perfect example of a situation where mediation might be able to be helpful.
Is that something that you see often in your line of work, that folks maybe overcome conflict or dysfunctional family dynamics? I mean, I was just so surprised to see the word forgiveness in there initially, but it does seem to make so much sense that you would want maybe some long-resolved conflict just taken care of before you pass.
Yeah, it's interesting to ask somebody if you had 24 hours left of life, who would you need to see? Who would you need to apologize to? From who would you need to seek understanding and forgiveness for you to be at peace at the end of that 24 hours? And that's your answer.
Right. And we're discussing the difficult decisions and discussions we and our loved ones will all face regarding planning for end-of-life care. We're talking with Dr. Paul Mitchell of Avow Hospice in Naples and elder care mediator Stephanie Borden, ahead of the workshop they'll be speaking at in Fort Myers on July 20th. You can join our conversation as well with your comments, questions, or stories. The phone number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. And Stephanie, Five Wishes was originally introduced in Florida, I understand.
That's right. A nonprofit called Aging with Dignity and based in Tallahassee.
And that would make me wonder, though, is this something that is Florida specific or is there some national version of this that could be applicable across state lines?
It is. It is valid in 28 states and the District of Columbia.
Now, just because laws vary from state to state, I mean, would you be able to would this still be applicable if you were perhaps in one of those states that did not necessarily recognize it the way Florida does?
I think what Aging with Dignity recommends in that case is that you fill out the document anyway, share it with your loved ones, share it with your physicians, and as long as your wishes are known, chances are pretty good that you would be able to have them followed. But you raise a really good point. It's not enough to just fill it out. You have to have that discussion with your loved ones and with your physicians. And then once you've completed the document, it's important to provide your healthcare agent with a copy, all your physicians with a copy, the hospital if you're frequently hospitalized. So the worst thing you can do is do this work, do this important work, put it in a safe deposit box or a drawer at home where nobody knows about it. You have to talk about it. You can revoke all or any part of the five wishes at any time. And if you have a pre-existing living will, they recommend that you destroy that if you're going to have five wishes represent your wishes.
You know, this might be a good time to really emphasize this point because it is so important. Yes, making written advance directives is very, very important and helpful. But the main thing is you want to make sure that those individuals who would have to speak for you when you can't speak for yourself know your wishes, to discuss what you would like to have done or not done when it's time to make these important decisions. Talk about this with the individuals who would have to make decisions for you if you're in a situation where you can't make decisions for yourself. I think the most important aspect of having advance directives is probably designating that individual to be your surrogate decision maker when you can't make decisions for yourself.
It does feel almost like, I would be concerned that whole process could still be a little bit incomplete simply because if there were some sort of emergency situation, I guess what I mean is, you know, we can't possibly predict every possible situation that may come up. And so sometimes a surrogate might not know because a situation is an emergency what the person would want. And so that surrogate and then the physician still sort of have to work together to do the best they can to help fulfill that person's wishes.
That would be true in a situation like that. But that's why it's so important to do this in advance, not right. Wait until there's an emergency or there's an urgency that exists. But this applies to everyone. A lot of people think, well, I'm only 40 years old. You know, I don't need to worry about this. This is of concern to everyone at most any age. But the key point is to try and make these arrangements in advance or at least discuss it. Who's going to speak for me when I can't speak for myself? And medical decisions need to be made.
I received a comment regarding today's discussion on Facebook from a gentleman actually doing his ER residency right now, and he writes, "I honestly wish more doctors would take the time to address these issues with their patients in a more in-depth manner. It is so important for patients to understand what can and can't be done and that end of life can be dealt with in a dignified, almost positive way." Dr. Mitchell, do you think that that's true also? Do you think more physicians need to be having these conversations with their patients and being more proactive about making sure that they have their advance directives in place?
Well, absolutely. This was a proposal at once to compensate physicians for having end-of-life discussions with patients, and I think we sort of know how politicized that became.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, yes, and this is what's being offered by the relatively new medical specialty, the medical specialty of palliative medicine and palliative care. This is a purview, and this comes under the purview, and a lot of what is accomplished when patients receive a palliative medicine consultation when they have chronic illnesses that may prove to be life-limiting or terminal, because the goal of care there is to make sure that patients' wishes are known so that and that they participate in the decision-making process. You know, we've gone to a system of what we refer to as shared decision-making, whereby we truly respect the autonomy of patients and individuals and families to make those decisions that they feel are in their own best interest and it's going to accomplish their goals and objectives. But palliative medicine is becoming more and more popular. Unfortunately, there's a widespread national shortage of palliative medicine physicians. More need to be trained, and the general public needs to become more aware as to what the role palliative medicine is beginning to play in our healthcare delivery system. But palliative medicine deals with these subjects, and it acts as the palliative medicine physicians sort of act as a an honest broker in helping individuals decide how to deal with chronic illness, disease processes that can't be cured, where the emphasis is more on the symptomatic treatment and doing those things that enhance quality of life as opposed to curing their disease process. There are a lot of decisions that need to be made, and a lot of help can be obtained by engaging a palliative medicine consultant.
I do think something that's really challenging, though, for the family member who's already under a lot of emotional stress, they're losing their loved one, and we're taught to respect the authority of physicians. So if a physician is saying, well, we want to do CPR, blah, 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 it takes a lot of courage for the healthcare agent to say, no, he doesn't want that. No, she didn't want that. Right. And here's the living will.
Right, right. Well, and Stephanie, I know that you have had, you know, some personal losses in your own past that have involved these kinds of, you know, end-of-life decisions. And I was hoping you could tell us a bit about your experience with your own mother.
Oh, yes, I will. Well, I lost my mom and my dad and my sister, and the three deaths were very different. But my mom had a beautiful death because she was in Minneapolis and had advanced kidney disease. I flew from Asheville, North Carolina, where I lived, to visit her, not knowing that she was in critical condition. Just as I was leaving for the airport, for some reason, I threw a bottle of lilac-scented lotion in my bag. And when I got off the plane, my uncle was there and said, your mom's not in good shape. We have to rush to the hospital. So she was unresponsive, not opening her eyes, not showing any sign of recognition. So I signed the forms to move her to the hospice floor of the hospital. I went in after she was set up in her room, and again, no result. I would say "Mommy" in her ear as loud as I could. She wouldn't open her eyes. So I took the bottle of lilac lotion because when I was a little girl, my mom and I would plant lilac bushes and pick lilacs in our backyard in Minnesota. I put some of the lotion on my finger and gently rubbed it on her upper lip so she could smell it. And lo and behold, her eyes opened. And I could tell, even though she couldn't speak, I could tell she knew it was me. And I just said, "Mommy, you've been hurting for a long time. And all of us kids are okay, and we want you to go. You'll see Dad. You'll see the children you've lost. You'll see your parents, and we'll all be okay." And she took two breaths that were very labored, like a fish lying on a dock, getting its last breath of air, and that was it. She died, and I felt that it was a great honor to be there. She gave birth to me, and I was helping her in her life. It was a real spiritual experience, and I have no regrets about it because I helped her to have a good death. In contrast, when my sister died of undiagnosed colon cancer, I got a phone call in the shower saying, "Your sister's dead." She was 33 years old.
We are just about running out of time here, but
okay.
Just I did want to point out that was, you know, the contrast there when you were able
yes.
to be there with your mother versus your sister when you were not able
such
to be there.
Such a difference, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And please give us your phone number for folks who might want to sign up for the workshop.
Okay. It's area code 239-424-0182. And the workshop is different because instead of a speech about the five wishes, everybody gets the five wishes. We'll go through it step by step. And they could leave the workshop with the documents completed, although they're getting pencils, not pens.
And you'll be able to consult with a physician. And then, of course, the pencils are important, so you can make changes on your own later.
Yes. Unfortunately, Dr. Mitchell will be on vacation. He won't be with us, but we will have a physician with us as well that day.
Excellent. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guests, elder care mediator Stephanie Borden and Dr. Paul Mitchell. He's chief medical officer for Avow Hospice in Naples. And again, Stephanie's Five Wishes workshop is Saturday, July 20th. That's from 1 to 4 at the Atrium on College Parkway in South Fort Myers. You can find more information on today's program, as well as an archive of past shows, on our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. There you'll also find all the information about the upcoming Five Wishes workshop. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers Luke Martin and Ashley Lopez. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.